Hey, welcome back to another Word Balloon. Before we get started, I wanted to remind you that ComicsExperience.com, the wonderful online comic book school for aspiring writers and artists, is offering a master seminar class with the writer Christos Gage. You know, Chris was just on our last episode of Word Balloon. The seminar is called Career Building for Comic Book Writers. It's one day only, Saturday, August 9th. And again, this is your chance to learn from a master comic book writer who has been writing for every major publisher, including runs on Avengers Academy, House of M, The Avengers, Buffy the Vampire Slayer currently, a lot more. And Comics Experience courses are offered streaming live, online. You'll be able to see Chris, ask him questions directly, and it's an all-day kind of event. And I know that he was saying as well on our Word Balloon episode that a lot of questions will gear the direction of this Career Building for Comic Book Writers seminar. If you miss the live session on August 9th, the recording will be available to registrants for 2 weeks. More information is available at their website, comicsexperience.com. You want to sign up now, though. Seating is limited. Man, I'm telling you, from the Peter David course to Phil Jimenez, and now currently Christos Gage, I think these master seminar courses are intense and deal with a lot of questions that are on your minds and or should be on your minds and will gear you on the right direction in building your comics career. ComicsExperience.com, the master seminar with Christos Gage, Career Building for Comic Book Writers, Saturday, August 9th. More information available at ComicsExperience.com. And make sure you sign up now because seating is limited. Now, on with the show. Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. John Suntress here, getting ready for San Diego Comic-Con, and especially on this episode, it's our preview episode of Comic-Con. I'll be involved with three panels this year, the podcast panel, and also showing the Lost 1978 comics documentary, and then finally, the Future of Geek panel on Friday. And my guests are people that will be appearing with me on the podcast panel, and then, of course, the panel that I'm moderating on Friday, the Future of Geek. We start things off with Calvin Reed of Publishers Weekly, also of the Publishers Weekly comic podcast, More to Come. We're going to be talking about Calvin's work on the podcast and just work it for Publishers Weekly in general and get a sense of what he thinks as he's been observing the comics business since the mid-80s. It's a real pleasure to finally get Calvin on the show. And I'm a big fan of their podcast, him, Heidi McDonald, and their producer, Katie. And I recommend it to you to listen to as well if you're looking for another great comics podcast. So it's a pleasure to have Calvin Reed on part one of Word Balloon. Then we're going to be talking to Rob Salkowitz. Now, you know Rob. Rob, of course, the wonderful author of a great book called Comic-Con and the Business of Pop Culture. He also arranged the Future of Geek panel that will be happening on Friday. Himself, Heidi McDonald, Tim Byers, I'll be moderating. We talk about the panel a bit and some of the things that we'll be discussing. We also mention a couple recent columns that he's had over at ICV2. You know, Rob is a wonderful business analyst and does a great job of analyzing what's happening in the geek business, both at conventions and in the publishing world. So it's a great chance to catch up with Rob. We do this every year around this time, usually right before Comic-Con, as I acknowledge in the interview. But it's a pleasure to have both Calvin and Rob to get into some good egghead discussion of the geek market and where things are today. It's all brought to you by the Word Balloon League of Listeners. Thank you very much for your support of Word Balloon, all of you, helping me out, giving me the money to get to conventions like San Diego and make the connections that will only lead to better podcasts and more exciting programming for Word Balloon listeners. If you would like to join the League of Balloon, if you'd like to join the League of Word Balloon listeners, you can go to patreon.com/wordballoon. That is the Patreon page. Subscribe to Word Balloon, just $1 a month. I would really appreciate it. There are also flat rate contributions you can make, and I'll be making custom voicemails for people for $15. And then for one $20 thing, we're going to have a Word Balloon town hall meeting and start doing those regularly, where it will be a nice round table with Word Balloon listeners and League of Word Balloon listeners and myself talking about what's going on in the geek world. So that stuff is all going to be starting up post San Diego. And so thank you for your help on all that. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Wonderful deals are going on. For instance, the new FX show, The Strain, well, you know it's been a comic book for a long time. You can get up to date on the comic book. Trades volume 1 through 4 are 45% off currently. You can also get ready for the new Fox show, Hellblazer, 45% off trade paperback volumes 1 through 8. There are also lower rates on international shipping options. If it's your first time shopping at InStockTrades.com, you can earn an extra 2% on your orders, not to mention the 42 to even more percent off you'll get off the standard retail price on your favorite hardcovers, graphic novels, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, all at reduced prices. Things like the Black Widow trade paperback, volume 1, Nathan Edmondson and Phil Noto, 50% off, it's just $8.99. You can get Andy Kubert's Damian, Son of Batman, Deluxe Hardcover Edition, 50% off, it's just $12.49. From Rick Remender and Wesley Craig and Lee Lowridge, you can get the first volume of Deadly Class, Reagan Youth. That is 50% off, just $4.99. Tales of the Batman, J.H. Williams, wonderful artwork from J.H., 50% off, it's just $24.99. You can get the Green Lantern Omnibus, Volume 2, great stuff from the Silver Age, 50% off, just $37.49. It seems like all the Buffy cast members are getting into writing the books. It's been happening for years over at Dark Horse. Well, there's a new collection, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Spike, Into the Light, written by James Marsden. It's 42% off. It's just $8.89. All of this waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. Don't take my word for it. Go over there and check it all out for yourself. InStockTrades.com. All right, let's start things off with a conversation with Calvin Reed. A real pleasure to talk to Calvin. As I said, I've been a fan of the Publishers Weekly PW Comics World podcast, More to Come, and we get a little bit of background on how that show came together and why, because certainly Calvin has had a forum for his opinions and critiques over at Publishers Weekly, but I think it's an excellent podcast, and I suggest you check it out. Calvin is going to be part of the podcast panel. It's happening Thursday afternoon at Comic-Con. It's going to be me, Calvin, John Mayo from Comic Book Page, Glenn Weldon from NPR's Pop Culture podcast, Tim Byers from The Motley Fool, and Heath Corson from the Nerdist Writers Panel. So that'll be great. And looking forward to having everybody together for an interesting conversation about comics. And to give you a taste of that, here's my conversation with Calvin Reed now on Word Balloon. Very happy to welcome Calvin Reed of Publishers Weekly onto the Word Balloon podcast. As you, I'm sure I said in the intro, Calvin is one of the co-hosts of Publishers Weekly Comics Edition, More to Come. Did I say the title right?
Yeah, yes. Well, yeah, that's close enough. Yeah, no, it's the PW Comics World's podcast, More to Come. I think that's kind of how we say it on the air, but you got it.
Excellent. Well, no, seriously, man, I am always happy to have podcasts that I like come on the show and get a chance to pick their brains. And also really happy that you're going to be on the podcast panel at San Diego this year, too.
Well, you know, obviously, thanks for inviting me on to this podcast. I'm excited to be on the panel. I have not been on in the past, and in fact, I haven't been able to get around for one reason or the other in the past. So I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll be able to be there for the other podcasters, and you know, be able to throw my two cents in as well.
Excellent, man. No, you know, hey, we always have tough competition. I haven't compared yet to see what we're up against, but there's always like a really good movie, you know, panel that's going on or TV stuff. So that's why, you know, they put us in the small room, but we usually do okay. And I also think with our combined audiences, you know, we do okay. And you know, I'm sure it'll come up before the panel. I'm going to, you know, record it and play it on Word Balloon. And certainly you guys are welcome to do the same. And I know John Mayo does it for Comic Book Page, and some of the other guys on the panel sometimes do it. So, you know, if you guys want it. So very cool, man. And I asked you before we started rolling, how long have you been doing the PW podcast?
Well, you know, it's funny. Knowing I was going to be on here, I actually went to iTunes to look it up because I was a little fuzzy. But it looks as though we did our first More to Come in the summer of 2011. And so we're kind of right. I guess it's about our fourth year doing it. And we've gone through some changes. I hope we've gotten better. But 4 years. So, yeah, even when I realized that, I was kind of said, wow.
That's awesome. And what was the reasoning behind doing the podcast? Because clearly you and Heidi, obviously, you guys are writing articles all the time covering this stuff. Why'd you feel the need to include, you know, an audio component to what you guys do?
Well, you know, I think one of the things was we wanted to have another channel to cover comics in another way. I think we wanted another way to kind of get out our take. And just to give you a little background, I mean, the comics coverage at Publishers Weekly, you know, we are the trade journal of the book industry. And years ago, when I started our coverage, brought in Heidi a little later, who has, of course, made everything a lot better than what I started with. But the whole idea was to highlight comics in the book trade. When I started working at PW, and this goes back a few years, it was in the mid-1980s, you know, comics was still overwhelmingly purely a periodical, you know, front list oriented publishing, you know, category. The book side of it was there. It was undeveloped. You really couldn't walk into bookstores necessarily and automatically find comics. So to have a podcast to me, as we saw the technology developing, was just another way for us to get our message out to that the book industry is interested in comics, and this is an important channel for people to and for readers to engage comics. So it was just another way to attach another tentacle of our coverage.
Well, this is why I wanted you on the podcast panel, and why I love your guys' show, because I think, and truly I mean this about your producer, Katie, as well. What's Katie's last name? Because I never remember.
Oh, Kate Fitzsimmons.
Kate Fitzsimmons. Okay, so you got Kate Fitzsimmons, Heidi McDonald, and yourself. Mm-hmm. I think you guys are all really good observers of what's going on, and you have I always love these reporter roundtable shows. I'm a big fan of the sports reporters on ESPN back in the day. And in Chicago, we had on our local television a local sports cable show featuring Sun-Times and Chicago Tribune sports writers. And it started on radio and then went to TV. And that's the thing. I just think the people that cover it day in and day out, as you guys do, and are able to get together and compare notes. I always find that. I mean, I come from a sports talk background.
Yeah, I was looking you up, and I saw, actually, I mean, I knew about your podcast, but I didn't realize about your background in sports writing and in boxing, too, as a
matter of fact, right? Oh, yeah, I'm a big a long time, man. And really, again, another reason why I enjoyed covering big fights and having us all there really getting the chance to just, even informally, kick around what's going on and what we're all seeing. And it was always reasonably fraternal. I mean, we all were competitive and trying to get our own stuff out there. But by the same token, you know, just kind of, hey, this is what I'm doing and this is what I'm seeing and comparing notes. And that's what I like about your guys' show and what I'm looking forward to about next week as well.
Yeah, I mean, we really saw it as a way that we could cover things in a way that really maybe we couldn't quite do in the print magazine or even in our online coverage. And also, I think it was also at a time when, just to give you even a little more background, you know, Publishers Weekly was acquired away from a gigantic, you know, octopus-like corporation in 2010 by our new owner, George Slowick. And we were really, the magazine was really remaking itself in many ways. And digital media was high on the priority. This is something we wanted to do. Plus, we also thought it was something that our bosses would say, hey, great, if you can do it, run with it. And in fact, early on, we had some technical issues because we didn't have quite the infrastructure to do it. That's where Katie came in. In addition to being a supremely knowledgeable comic book nerd, really across the board, in almost any category you can think of, she's a real super fan. She's done all kinds of podcasts, video casts. She's got the technical skills. She actually really kind of jerry-rigged the system up for us to get us going. So people always will sort of say, oh, well, look, as soon as we get the pipe set up, you know, we'll get you going. But of course, we knew that we needed to kind of learn what we were doing here.
Absolutely.
kind of by doing it. And so we kind of did it ourselves. It's kind of a DIY, thanks to Katie. And so now we've evolved to another level where our editors are very happy with us. We did get a big technical upgrade so that the whole show is so much better now, so much better sounding now than it used to be. So, yeah, we've come a long way, but really we just saw it, digital technology and podcast as just another way to get our coverage out there.
Interesting that you guys got bought just around the same time that the big shifts were happening at DC and Marvel.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. That was what, about 2009 when Warner sort of basically took control and started making big changes at DC.
Yep. And obviously, so, Disney, yeah. You know, and Disney and Marvel kind of, you know, really starting to reap the success that, you
yeah.
know,
mm-hmm.
their association has had. So, yeah, I mean, and that's it's great to hear, too, that your coverage goes back to the 80s, because, again, and much like Tidy as well, you guys have this kind of market perspective of seeing where things were as they comparing to as they change now. And, I mean, that's the great thing. Every week, you guys are talking about stuff. I mean, you talked about the Rick Remender controversy, obviously, last week on your most recent episode. And, you know, even DC's royalty payment structure changing. And I think you guys do a great job of explaining these issues or at least, you know, subjects. You know, I mean, that's, it's interesting because and I'm curious about your opinion, because certainly with social media – I think fan entitlement, and it's something that you guys talked about specifically with Remender, is at an all-time high. And again, I mean, you know, coming from sports talk and stuff, I saw it with sports fans as well. So, you know, there is this line of, you know, hey, man, if you don't like it, don't buy it. But I do think that some people get so passionate, which is a good thing, and really do feel like they have a sense of ownership on these subjects, that sometimes they do overstep what their role was, but the market is changing and their role is changing as well.
Yeah, you know what? Obviously, I do agree with you. I'm a huge sports fan as well as a huge comics fan, and you know, and I'm a little older. You know, I mean, I'm 62 years old. I mean, I grew up in the 60s.
Okay,
I came out of another kind of sports world into the present, just as old, in the same way that I've sort of bridged a different publishing world, the old school non-digital publishing world, and now I find myself in this new one. Yeah, you know, it's funny. At the end of our last podcast, I think, and this didn't go in the podcast, I think we were, as we were talking about the Rick Remender Captain America imbroglio, you know, I sort of said, you know, the best thing that ever happened to comics, among the things, was the rise of the internet and how it's brought fans together. And I said, you know what the worst thing that's happened to comics? Maybe the rise of the internet and how it's brought all comics fans together. And I'm saying that only joking, but really in the sense that there does seem to be this a line that's crossed between, you know, issuing your opinion and sort of creating this virtual mob that sort of rampages around, you know, on issues, whether it's got any facts or not.
Yeah. You know, and you know, that kind of wildfire, and you guys even made the allusion too of the villagers, the torch bearing villagers, kind of storming.
There's a little bit of that. Now, you know, I'll say this: at the end of the day, you know, I'd rather have people, I'd rather have more people talking and engaged and passionate about the subject than the old days where, you know, we were kind of basically isolated, and you could, you know, send letters, and, you know, obviously it was getting, you know, snail mail was sort of one of the main ways of connecting between artists and other fans.
Yes.
And the internet has kind of has done great things in the sense that it's given fans a power in some ways so that they aren't so disregarded as they were in the past. But, you know, it also has created, I think, a new reality that where I think everybody, artists, publishers, you know, can sort of feel like they're being, like, you know, lined up against the wall.
Yeah, man. No, absolutely.
You know, and the fans are coming after them. And often, you know, in some cases, not in all cases, without the facts.
Understood. And you're right. And again, that's why I'm glad that there are journalists such as yourselves that really can like go, okay, no, but this is what really happened, and let's separate the opinion from fact and get down to, and then make your judgments and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
The other problem, though, is, and it's something that I've talked about with all the creators that are involving themselves in crowdfunding, not just Kickstarter, but the other platforms as well, and that kind of, again, hand-in-hand thing of going directly to your audience and saying, support my project. So there is a little bit of ownership in terms of, well, hey, man, we're funding this. And it is beyond buying something from DC and Marvel where they're going to put out the donuts every week no matter what versus Creator X going, hey, this is my passion project. I'm raising money. And again, it's this interesting line of, you know, the fan involvement and support. And again, this overextension of entitlement in some cases.
Yeah, well, once again, you know, there's a lot of I'm trying not to paint the fans overly negative light.
Sure.
Because I do think that when you look at what digital media has done, it's really empowered artists, and in many ways it's done that by empowering the fans to support the people that they really love. I mean, obviously Kickstarter is one example of this. I mean, there are other things up there. I think even you're up on what, Patreon, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, this is a revolutionary platform.
Yep.
And this is, I mean, and I'm happy to just immediately, you know, say, look, this is one area where the fans can show in the most positive way how much they care about something by basically coughing up the dough to help people do projects in many cases that would never have existed otherwise. So we live in a really new, complex era now. I mean, I've said this many times. It's a new golden era for comics, and I really do believe that. You know, even if there's some things, you know, that happen now that I'm not so crazy about, nevertheless, I think we are in the best of all possible worlds right now. Digital media has enabled so much creativity. It's really allowed artists, and I think this is really what's important to me. I mean, it's really given artists options in an industry where often they didn't have very many at all.
Absolutely, man. And it's honestly, and forgive me if this sounds condescending because I don't mean it this way. It's great to see, because you're a little bit older than me. Not that much older, but you are older than me. And, no, but honestly, I see it as well. And again, as a media observer and a media participant, you know, me in broadcasting and you in print, and now obviously in podcasting as well, it's neat to see. And I can hear it in the excitement in your voice, too, that you get it and see this as the golden opportunity that it is. Because I know a lot of people in the broadcast business that still don't know what to make of new media and the opportunities that it presents to themselves, let alone the things that they cover. And it's
absolutely,
you know, it's, and yeah, I mean, that's what, yeah, your work and your words speak for themselves. That's awesome. Go on.
No, we're still in the process of educating, you know, professionally within the industry. I mean, for lots of good reasons. I mean, in fact, I think one of the things that I love about our podcast and that, you know, all three of us among the hosts, we bring our backgrounds to the show. And, you know, I cover the comics industry, but, you know, principally my job is to cover the book industry in general. And these issues are much the same in both industries, whether you're talking about the conventional book industry or the conventional comics industry.
Okay.
These issues, disintermediation of retailers, the growth of digital distribution, how it's affecting artists, how it's affecting publishers, how it's affecting retailers, you know, the rise of the thing. I mean, these are all issues that that affect you no matter what you're publishing. So I feel like it's great that I can bring my, you know, some of my general publishing information to my reporting on comics, but also to bring stuff from comics, which in many cases is kind of on the cutting edge, even beyond what's going on in general book publishing, to the other side of my gig. So, yeah, this is a great time, and then what you're seeing in the general book publishing industry is, yeah, among conventional, longtime professionals, some reluctance to embrace the digital transition. But you know what? Many of them have. And at the end of the day, you better be paying attention to it because this is going to, I personally am not a big believer that it's going to wipe out conventional publishing, but I think it's a whole new side of publishing is rising up, and we're seeing it.
That's cool. Yeah, you know, to me as a broadcaster, it reminds me of when cable really took off in the early 80s.
And, mm-hmm, good point.
You know, and yeah, and that it could sit alongside terrestrial,
sure,
broadcast media and stuff. And I feel the same way about the new streaming media that is happening right now. And obviously, mm-hmm, it sounds like, you know, so is it fair to say then, and I want your opinion on, as the, you know, Wednesday Warrior retailers, you know, the comic book stores have to make room for their digital neighbors, you know, you think that both can exist alongside of each other and thrive?
Well, you know, what's been happening on that front is that, and this isn't my idea, the comics retailers themselves have completely gone through a transformation about digital media and how it will impact their businesses. And I'd have to say right now, if you walk to most comic shops and ask them, you know, what's their take on digital media, I think what you'll hear is that, you know what, it's creating new readers who are coming into our shops looking for books that we would have never thought a newcomer would be asking for. You know, in addition to our podcast and other coverage, we do an annual feature where we, as we're a traditional book industry trade journal, but we do our best to cover the direct market, the comic shop market as well. And this is one of the features in the year where we talk primarily to comic shop owners. And we do talk to some general bookstores for the feature as well. But we basically talk to retailers. You know, it's not a scientific survey. I always want to make that clear. It is an informal survey where we talk with usually up around 10 retailers, usually in different parts of the country.
Okay.
And we just kind of, we go over how the holiday season was. It's usually earlier in the year. How the holiday season was for them, and what are the biggest trends that they see in their stores right now, and then what do they see, you know, going forward in the short term? And the biggest transformation I've seen began in late 2011 after the launch of the New 52, when DC went day and date. That seemed to be kind of a turning point, a tipping point, where after that, we started hearing from retailers who were absolutely terrified of digital up until that point, and really thought it was going to undermine their businesses.
Sure.
To hearing a far different story in 2010 and 2012, in that they're seeing new readers come in their stores. They're not necessarily looking for Marvel and DC. They're looking for Image Comics, and interestingly enough, they're looking for independent workers, and you know, they're looking for a broader array of comics just at a time when there is a huge amount of diversity of genres in the retail scene. So, my point right now is that, yeah, we're at a really great time where retailers see digital as, in fact, working hand-in-hand to support print.
And how about on the bookseller side, the traditional bookseller side? You know, I would talk to guys like Greg Rucka and Brubaker and say, isn't it a shame that your guys' crime comics aren't in the crime section or the mystery section? And you could say that about steampunk and all the genres that we get in comic books. Are the book retailers, you know, getting it in terms of A, stocking the stuff, and are we seeing impressive numbers? You guys got access to the book scan numbers, or to some degree at least. And yeah, tell me how are comics playing from a numbers standpoint, but more importantly too, like, yeah, are they also seeking out those Image and other independent creators? Because, you know, DC, Time Warner and Disney have no problem with their distribution of their product.
Mm-hmm.
It is a question of the IDWs, the Image, Dark Horse, all these other guys. Are they getting to the general audience in the bookstores, and is their products making an impact?
I think what you'll hear now, if you talk to any publisher, first off, you can see it. Almost every periodical series is collected into trade paperback.
Right.
I mean, that, you know, it's got to be over 90%. Everything isn't picked, but almost everything. And most of the publishers that I talk to, they're very clear that their publishing plan includes both periodicals and book collections and book distribution. I think if you go through Feeler from the big two to the new independents, everyone will tell you their business plan includes either, you know, obviously distribution by Diamond Comics, but in many cases distribution by Diamond Book to the trade book side. If I'm not mistaken, you know, the combined periodical book market for books in the U.S. is usually around 700 million or so. That's almost equally divided between periodicals and book format comics. And this is something that has only existed in most recently over the last 10 to 15 years.
Right.
And if I may so, I think Publishers, if I may say so, Publishers Weekly, as well as trends like the internet, librarians, having far more respect for comics, I think all of this has been a part of creating a new market for book format comics that almost didn't exist like 20 years ago. So, yes, the book channel side of the business, I think is growing. It hit a wall in the recession year.
Sure, sure.
And I think dropped back a few a bit. But once again, in the years since the more or less end of the Great Recession, and as well as the launch of digital comics and the continuing growth of the popularity of digital comics, the book channel side has grown back again. So we're kind of on a growth mode.
Okay.
And this is reflected both in the book scan numbers, but just as well. I mean, I get a lot of my information from Milton Gripe and from ICV2.
Sure.
I mean, really, book scan can tell you about individual titles, but really, I mean, there's nobody goes out there and really comes in with any creditable numbers about the size of the whole industry, and that's Milton. So we use ICV2 numbers too, and that's what he's telling us, and I have no reason to doubt them. And plus, I've been here in the book industry. I've seen where the book publishing side of the industry has gone from really only sporadic, I should say this, book collections of the great newspaper comic strips were always a big feature in the
Absolutely.
Book industry.
Absolutely,
Peanuts,
man.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Far Side, Doonesbury, and the like. But, you know, book-length narrative, fiction, and serious nonfiction, that was not so always the case. Now, if you go to the big New York City trade publishers, Random House, Penguin, HarperCollins, either they have standalone graphic novel imprints or acquiring graphic novels, either for YA, which is the booming part of the business right now,
certainly,
or for adults, is an established part of their publishing program. This was not the case in the years when I first started in book publishing.
There's a lot more comics criticism that's being published as well, and I'm glad to see that, and I think we're getting good collections of essays of, you know, one subject, and you get a bunch of writers talking about a specific artist or writer or creator or a subject. I mean, you know, Sequart does those like Legion books.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
How is that stuff playing? Because I always think, you know, us comic fans want the comics medium to be taken more seriously. And it always seems to me that it's that level of criticism, the sophistication of it, and also the acceptance of the audience that elevates a medium to be regarded as, and I, you know, forgive me, but there's no better words to describe it, a more serious art. And again, it's, you know, but
well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't cite chapter and verse, but clearly comics criticism is an important element on that. Now, I also know that there's been quite a bit of discussion these days about the dearth of serious comics criticism, so I'm not quite sure how to resolve that. I mean, that seems to be an issue too, but as I look around, there seem to be more and more people writing seriously about comics in more different places. I think you also find that there's a far greater, there seems to be a growth of study in comics at the academic level.
Yep.
There's also, University Press Presses of Mississippi, which has long had a publishing program as a university press, publishing serious academic studies on all kinds of topics within in comics. And then once again, we're also seeing the rise of serious nonfiction. I mean, it's easy to cite, you know, Joe Sacco as kind of a pioneering influence. But I mean, I'm talking about comics that that look at history, that look at politics. I mean, if you look at that Hill and Wang, which is the great history imprint of Pierre Strauss-Giroux, I mean, they started a line of comics several years ago called Novel Graphics, devoted to nonfiction comics, and they've done a long list of books. I mean, they had a graphic examination of the Affordable Health Care Act out, you know, at the just as the healthcare was coming to the market. You could buy a graphic work that talked about the issues around it, critic pro and con, and what it was trying to do. So, and in almost every way, as comics have made their way into the larger reading market, and this is not to knock the traditional comics industry, but just that this is a natural progression of comics out of its sometimes sort of self-imposed ghettoization as a, as a purely a fan effort, but as a reader. I mean, I think that's one of the key elements of the book industry. This is where the readers are. And as comics have reached into the mainstream culture and into a retail comic shop, I mean, general interest bookstores, what's happening, of course, is the genres are diversifying. And, one of the things that we have not always been able to say in U.S. comics is there are comics for everyone.
Indeed. Absolutely. And I'm really glad that you brought up those nonfiction comics, because it's what Will Eisner was able to convince the military to with magazine and get the enlisted to understand the technical manuals better. And yeah, I'm assuming that same publisher did the 9/11 commission.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also and oh, damn it, I'm forgetting the congressman's name that did the wonderful.
Oh, yes. Well, one of the great bestsellers last year was March Book One, which actually was published by Top Shelf by Representative John Lewis, the great civil rights icon, written by Andrew Iden and art by Nate Powell. And it's funny, I just did a story this morning about just announcing the cover art for March Book Two, because it's a three-volume graphic memoir of this guy who is a great American hero. And so that's coming in January, rather early 2015. So I just did a story about that. So it's a serious memoir as well. I mean, it's interesting that the, you know, I guess kind of during the 80s and the autobiographical comics movement, you know, obviously most identified with Harvey Pekar, we've seen this explosion of personal, of first-person memoir. But really, we're receiving even more stuff just based on history, politics. It's really an exciting time to be in comics, no matter what kind of comics you're making.
I haven't had a chance to read Chuck Dixon's Depression-era comic, and I know that
I haven't had a chance to read it either. You know, it was in here, but I've got to get a copy of it. But go on, sorry.
No, not at all. No, and I obviously we're both looking forward to it. Because, yes, as you were saying about politically as well, I found and we haven't talked about it on Word Balloon yet, but if listeners don't know, Chuck Dixon, it was covered pretty well in the blogosphere, and I imagine if people listen to the podcast, they're reading the blogs and everything. But yeah, Chuck kind of really made a big point and made an editorial with his collaborator in the Wall Street Journal about you know, the fair, whether there's too much conservative or that there's too much liberalism at the big two, and that's what's keeping him out. And of course, it was conveniently as he was releasing his comic book adaptation of a look at the Depression from a conservative standpoint. And shame on me that I don't have the original book's title and author. But I on the one hand, I applaud.
I think it's called The Forgotten Man,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
It is The Forgotten Man. Thank you. Absolutely. Yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, on the one hand, I think it's great. And I'm Father Flanagan. There's no such thing as a bad comic book. It's like every point of view should be available from a very First Amendment standpoint. By the same token, I am interested to see as well, because, you know, sometimes politics does get in the way of historical perspective. So that in particular is a comic that I am interested in reading. And I've got a good relationship with Chuck, despite being, opposed to him on a lot of political things. But mm-hmm. we've always had reasonable conversations. And I'm going to read it. Because I don't do critiques on my show. But my thing mm-hmm. is, if I like something, then they're on the show. So my feeling is, even not a taste thing, but if I think it's worth reading, then they're on the show. So
yeah, well, I think we discussed this a little bit on More to Come, but yeah, we review the book here. I mean, Heidi McDonald is, in fact, our graphic novels review editor. So okay. The book was in the office, and I saw it, and it went through our review process. I haven't had a chance to read it myself, but I would like to. I mean, I'm not so sure just whether conservatives are being persecuted in the comics industry, but the book industry in general, obviously is generally sort of painted as a liberal bastion that's pushing conservatives out. People can make up their own minds about whether that's true or not, but certainly I haven't seen a whole lot of graphic novels and conservatives from the conservative point of view, but bring them on. I'd love to read them, and we'll read them, and we'll decide for ourselves what we think of them.
Well, that's the thing, man. I mean, and especially in this current era where I do think the power resides in the creators, it's like, if you don't think those voices are out there, step up and make it. And that's why it's like, by all means, again, I think they're, it's playing to a base when it was presented in the Wall Street Journal. It is a business paper, of course, yeah. But it definitely has a conservative bent to it. I am curious, but I agree with you in terms of when Chuck was crying, saying, and crying is a bad characterization, but claiming that there might be some political discrimination about him getting jobs. And I'm like, I know a lot of conservatives that are doing quite well at DC and Marvel, and even without even trying could name Billy Tucci and Bill Willingham, who are very, they've made their politics known publicly. Ethan Van Sciver's another guy that's made his politics known publically. They seem to get jobs at the big two.
I interviewed Frank Miller. He made no bones about his political positions. So
you're right. Holy terror. Absolutely, man. That's true. Oh, my God. That's funny. But yeah. And also, like you said, and I'm glad to see, I was talking with Diana Schutz, and she was talking mm-hmm. about how comics criticism is finally really, taking hold in the academic circles, and that it's really being treated like a real art form and worthy of discussion and classes and stuff. And it's interesting to see the institutions that are embracing it and the ones that there is still reluctance. I know that there are colleges that had comic book people, starting writer programs, and the department chairs are like, well, no, we don't really want comic books. And even in fact, to the point of them saying, I don't know if professionals really have a place in teaching students. And I'm like, my God, that's exactly who you need teaching students, are people that know how to get the jobs. I mean, these people want to not only pursue their art, but obviously, hopefully, be commercial artists in making their art and stuff. And I know, again, from a broadcast standpoint, there's value to be taught by people who actually have done the job and can tell you what to avoid while you're pursuing your own creative curiosity and interest. So it's an interesting time that both, like I said, there's acceptance and also still reluctance in a lot of academic circles.
Yeah, but and just speaking directly to academic circles, and clearly there are issues around this, and even going back to our just breakdown between liberal and conservative politics, sure. I mean, we see big censorship issues with Alfred Bechtel's Fun Home in South Carolina, the big conflict about was it the College of Charleston or some South Carolina University that was that had Fun Home on a reading list, and some conservative state legislators took issue with it, and there's a big back and to and fro over about removing some funding. So there's that side of it. On the other hand, you see college campuses taking on, we were just talking about Representative John Lewis's book. I mean, there's a number of campuses that have made it the required reading for freshmen. I don't know if you know about Rob Salkowitz, the futurist author who writes about comics and pop culture.
He signed this program with you, man. Absolutely. Go on about it.
Yes, great guy. Real visionary guy. I mean, I was interviewed by Skype from his class at, I believe it's the University of Washington in Seattle. So, you know, he's bringing the industry and people who cover and work in the industry right into his classroom, you know, using technology. And, you know, and if you look around the country, other things are doing. So, yeah, on the one hand, we have that. But on the other hand, we also have this real hunger for what comics can bring to the table educationally, critically, intellectually, culturally. So, it's really a new golden age for the medium.
That's excellent, man. And, you know, it is this kind of conversation that you can find each week on Calvin's podcast as well. And say the title again, because I want people to find it correctly on iTunes.
We're more to come, and we're the podcast for Publishers Weekly's Comics World. And Comics World is just our way of describing our online and print coverage of the comics and graphic novel publishing.
So give people the URL of, I mean, I'm assuming there's a specific place on the Weekly website.
Yeah, you know, I always direct people to go to publishersweekly.com/comics. That's the front page of the comics department there. And when you get to the page, you'll see buttons and links to, you know, whatever our current coverage is. There's a link to the podcast archive and which has the most recent podcast, as well as, you know, you can go back all the way to the beginning to our first one. And, you know, if you want to compare sound quality then and now, you might want to try that. But go to publishersweekly.com/comics.
Excellent. And, check out the podcast, because not only do they have the weekly roundtables, but they go out to conventions, and they were at Special Edition. There were floor interviews from there.
Yep,
there were floor
yep.
interviews from Heroes World. I enjoyed your conversation with Charlie Brownstein, Comic Book Legal Defense Fund in particular, and talking about some of these very issues that we were talking about today with the libraries and, you know, and stores, certainly. And it's amazing that in this era that there's still these kind of First Amendment problems. But then again, when you see all the world the political headlines of today, and we really are a 50-50 country, I guess it isn't surprising that this is still a problem.
I guess it's not surprising, and it's also gratifying that obviously we've got someone like the CBLDF out there basically making sure that that your right to read remains. So, yeah.
Absolutely, man. Well, you know, and I know you got a meeting coming up, so we'll wrap up for today, but it really was a pleasure having you on. I hope you will come back.
Absolutely.
Oh, great,
it's been
man.
A blast, man. Thanks for inviting me.
Likewise.
I really and I'm even more looking forward to being on the panel in San Diego.
Here, man. Meeting you face to face, and I'm gonna shoot you an email and everybody else that's on the panel to make sure that if there's something that you want to throw out there as far as discussion and stuff, that we get a crack at it. Because like I say, it's when we're at Comic-Con, it's like sports writers at the Super Bowl or any big sporting event, where it's like, this is our chance to take pulse of the industry. And that's what, Salkowitz is doing on his panel with Heidi and Tim, and I'm moderating that panel.
So, great. Okay, terrific.
Yeah, man. So, thanks for your time today, and Word Balloon listeners will hear you in a couple of weeks as well on the podcaster panel. But thank you, Calvin Reed.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me, man. Had a great time.
And again, that podcast panel is going to be happening Thursday afternoon, 4 o'clock. Looking forward to conversations with Calvin Reed, Glenn Weldon, John Mayo, Tim Byers, Heath Corson, and myself. It's going to be a great time. The podcast panel will be happening Thursday at Comic-Con. Check your local listings for show times and date. All right, let's move on to another panel that we're going to be having on Friday at 1 o'clock, The Future of Geek. It's going to be moderated by me, but it's Heidi McDonald, again, Tim Byers of The Motley Fool, and our next guest, Rob Salkowitz. Very excited about this panel and also this conversation with Rob. Rob is an excellent author. He wrote the book Comic-Con and the Business of Pop Culture, and a lot of the theories that he has in there, he applies to what's currently going on in the comic book market. And I imagine it will figure into the conversation that we're having next Friday at Comic-Con. But you get a little taste of it now with Rob. It's a pleasure to have Rob Salkowitz back on Word Balloon.
Rob Salkowitz, welcome back to Word Balloon. Man, it's been a while. I see you at the conventions, but I'm glad we have a chance to catch up. We usually do it around this time of year now that I think about it. This might be the third year running right before San Diego we're talking.
Oh, we should make it an annual tradition. It's always a pleasure to be on your show, John.
My pleasure as well. And thank you for asking me to moderate the panel you have coming up, which, you know, in the broadest strokes, and I'll ask you to describe it. It's something we've discussed on our show, and we've talked about your book before and the columns that you write for ICB2. But looking, you know, at this wonderful experience of geek chic that's been going on, how long can the party last? And I believe that's kind of the broad topic of your panel.
Exactly. The panel is called The Future of Geek, and it will be featuring Heidi McDonald and Tim Byers, who are both great and very perceptive analysts of what's going on the publishing and entertainment side. And you, of course, will be moderating, and I'll be presenting as well. And I'm excited to announce that we've just completed some really cool research on the convention audience. It was sponsored by Eventbrite, the ticketing company, to figure out exactly who's going to all of these conventions and what do they think about what's going on and where are they spending their money. And there's going to be really a lot of very interesting information for, you know, con attendees in general, organizers, retailers, exhibitors, people that sort of, you know, you go to enough conventions and you kind of get the idea of what's going on there, but there really isn't a whole lot of data, a lot of hard numbers to substantiate those subjective perceptions, and that's about to change. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, that's the thing, and I envy the guys in the Marvel room, and it's so funny, John Hickman and I were talking about this in our last interview. They've got Dave Gabriel to crunch the numbers over at Marvel, and really has, I think, when is a good time to release a book. I mean, just everything that, you know, as best criteria as a publisher can gather to make their moves from a publishing standpoint. And it's interesting now to really get this breakdown information of the audience. Because, yeah, I mean, it's so weird. I don't know if you happen to hear Neil Adams on Fat Man on Batman, Kevin Smith's podcast, but it was really talking about how in a lot of ways, specifically the comic book business, is built on this series of accidents of people, opportunistic people, and I mean that in the best way, taking advantage of ways to create business, the way the direct market was created in response to the limitations of the magazine distribution market.
Well, it's always been a fine balance of intuition and sort of predatory business sense on the part of some of the older guys from the golden age and probably up until the present day. But the world we live in now, you know, it's all data driven. And a lot of people find that a little off-putting and a little creepy. What I tend to say is the only thing worse than big data is big ignorance. And I think that some of the data that we're getting about who the audience is and what they're becoming and what younger people are looking for in comics and fan culture, having hard data to support that is going to dispel a lot of the pernicious old myths about, you know, the comic audience is mostly older guys and certain people don't spend money at conventions and those sorts of things. And you have the retailers sort of giving the fisheye to people walking around saying, you know, that person is a real customer because she's wearing a costume. And that's, again, I think we're going to have some eye-opening numbers to show that a lot of those beliefs are basically a load of garbage.
That's cool. And, I mean, you know, Eventbrite is obviously a great company, and certainly conventions are paying attention to that. I give the example of Marvel. You know, DC has its internal surveys that they've been doing both for their audience and for retailers. And also even within the company with creators, obviously, some of the decisions they're making. I think it's an interesting time where information is always crucial to success. And yeah, that there are ways to get it. Now, like you said, there is that paranoia of the subversive side. And yet it is this social media experience right now that is impacting media in so many ways. And I, Calvin Reed and I were talking about this on this very Word Balloon episode. You know, we obviously the thing came up with Fire Rick Remender, the meme that kind of took off a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, it's just like you said. I mean, it's on the one hand, there's this data mining that's going on for the people that experience social media and the way that they're interacting now. But there's also this fan entitlement. I mean, yeah, you know, beyond what we were just discussing about, what do you think of this fan entitlement side of what's happening with social media?
You know, I mean, I think in a certain way, the customer's always right. So, but it's never been a better time to be a fan. I mean, you're not ever going to get everything always the way you want it. But I mean, let's think about it. Like when we were growing up, you know, the idea that you could have, you know, $200 million Hollywood blockbuster movie that's faithful for the most part, you know, to the stories that we love, coming out not like once every 5 years, but like five times a year, and have a great convention to go to every weekend, in some cases more than one, and, you know, to have books of all kinds doing pretty well right now. So you've got, you know, creator-owned stuff, you've got licensed titles, you've got the sort of tried-and-true superhero franchises. I mean, there's never been a better time to be reading this stuff. And, I mean, one of the cool things about comics in particular is, you know, we can talk about data and, you know, ways to look at the market and make better decisions, but it's kind of a hard thing to engineer because comics uniquely comes down to individual creative voice, individual creative vision. And, you know, as long as there's, you know, in some ways it's about, you know, helping these people find their audience a little bit better too, so that, you know, these great talents, you know, aren't out there screaming in the wilderness or living at the behest of some editor that likes them one day and doesn't like them the next day, you know, that these people can actually break through and that the people who want to read, you know, stuff by these creators don't have to go through the intermediary of the publishers anymore either.
Sure. Are you finding – I want to talk about your most recent ICV2 article about slave labor graphics and their move for crowdfunding and that. In your research of how everybody is doing from a publisher standpoint, before we get to the specifics of slave labor graphics, is – you know, we're kind of seeing numbers, some diamond numbers that – you know, Image seems to be making a step forward. It sounds like more retailers are willing to take in Image stuff. Are the numbers supporting that? And are we really seeing people sample things beyond the preconceived notions of just, you know, it really being DC and Marvel and everybody else kind of fighting over the crumbs?
You know, to be honest, I don't have any special insights into the publishing numbers. I see what everybody else sees and from, you know, Diamond and ICV2 and stuff like that.
Okay.
And certainly, you know, anecdotally, you know, for some of the retailers that I've talked to and seen, it shows that Image is definitely making a big surge. IDW is making a big surge. You know, a title like My Little Pony. The other day, I was in my comic store on Saturday, and the comic store was crowded with little girls going to buy their copies of My Little Pony while their parents were sort of browsing the graphic novel racks. And you know, just think about that sentence. Think about the like four or five improbable things in that one sentence, right? The comic store was crowded with little girls buying their books. You know, I mean, that's part of what's going on right now. So it's not just, you know, not just the obvious stuff, not just the stuff that the traditional fan is going to think about first. There's, you know, all kinds of stuff going on right now.
Very cool. Let's and I guess again, and you'll forgive me, but maybe some of these questions I'm preparing for next week's panel. So folks might be hearing that when we rebroadcast the panel, or if you attend certainly in San Diego, and I certainly hope you do. By the way, and we should point that out, Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock.
So the Future of Geek panel is Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock. I actually have an embarrassment of riches at this year's Comic Con. I'm going to be on four different panels on a couple of different subjects. This one is the one that's closest to my heart because this is about all the stuff that I love to talk about. But the previous day on Thursday at noon, I'll be doing a panel with Mark Greenberg, who is a legal maven, actually a law professor at San Francisco State University, and just put out a terrific book on intellectual property law as it applies to comics. And so he and I are going to be talking about, you know, what the future of comics looks like from a legal perspective and who's going to own the rights to this stuff and what's going to happen with the Kirby case and a whole bunch of these other kinds of issues. So if that's your bag, that's part of the Comics Arts Conference on Thursday. I'll be interviewing my good buddy, great independent comics creator, Batten Lash, creator of Supernatural Law and Archie versus Punisher and First Gentleman of the Apocalypse. He is a special guest at the con this year. I'll be interviewing him actually right before our panel at noon on Friday, and then sprinting over across the convention center to hang with you guys at 1. And then on Friday afternoon, just in case, on the off chance you're not totally sick and tired of me, at 4 o'clock I'll be doing a panel on comics, marketing, and brands with Ed Catto and Steve Rotterdam from Bonfire Agency and a whole bunch of other people, including our friend Heidi McDonald again.
Excellent. Well, and Ed and Steve are friends of the program as well, and I enjoyed the presentation last year. You were on the panel last year, weren't you?
Yeah, on the marketing panel. Yeah, we really threw some furniture at each other on those panels. I have a particular take on how comics branding and marketing and all of that stuff should go as it relates to consumer products, and so that'll be a fun opportunity to mix it up with those guys again.
No, that's excellent, man. And to be honest, no, all of your panels sound fantastic. And Mark Greenberg might have to be a future Word Balloon guest based on what you've already said. And I'll check out the panel next week and check out the book. I'm very interested in that. That's what's interesting right now. And you touch upon it in this ICV2 article from I've got the wrong one up here, but here we go. From June 30th.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, Slave Labor Graphics turning to crowdfunding, much as you point out, Fantagraphics did a little bit earlier. You know, give us the broad strokes of that article. People can read some of the details, and we'll talk about it right now as well, if you don't mind.
It actually comes from the framework that I put out there in my book, Comic-Con and the Business of Pop Culture, where we're looking at the comics market going in a couple of different ways. So on one hand, you've got the big companies becoming arms of the entertainment industry and becoming the launching points for these super franchises and everything. And then you've got the other side of the business, the indie comics business, that is actually becoming part of the cultural scene. So you're seeing a lot of this stuff being, great graphic novels being reviewed in the New York Times and being reviewed in these places where, we've gotten the critical language to talk about comics as literature and everything. But part of what's come with that is that, for some of these places, it's been a commercial marginalization. And a lot of these companies that are putting out these great books like Fantagraphics and Slave Labor, are catering to a very specialized audience, and their costs are going up, and the distribution is getting harder, and they're occupying this place that, like for classical music and jazz and poetry and these very respected art forms that have trouble finding a broader audience. And so what I was suggesting in that article is a lot of these companies have turned to crowdfunding and gone to Kickstarter. Fantagraphics had an extremely successful Kickstarter where they pre-sold their whole spring and summer 2014 line to supporters in order to get the money to put those out. Mm-hmm. So slave labor is a different situation. They've, a lot of their problems, I think, were kind of self-caused from some bad business decisions, and Dan Vado basically threw himself on the mercy of his fans and said, look, if you want this to keep going, please chip in some money just to help out, just to keep the doors open. And he was very, very honest and forthright with it, and I think people came through for him. I know I did. Because I don't want to live in a world where there's no publishers that are like that. And sometimes you got to dig deep for that. But the trick, I don't think it's sustainable. I don't think it's scalable to keep using these crowdfunding platforms for that purpose, because that's not what they're for. But
right.
If these publishers embraced their marginal status and embraced their cultural significance, they could become nonprofits. And, a nonprofit organization is a specific entity under the law, and it doesn't mean that you can't make any money. It just means that you can't distribute that to shareholders. And so it comes with some other advantages. There's tax advantages. You can raise money from people, and the contributions are tax deductible to the donors. So that's
right.
A big encouragement for that. There's ways that you can use the mail. There's ways that you can use interns and volunteer labor. Fantagraphics is here in Seattle, where we just voted to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which is great in a lot of ways, but it's going to be tough for a company like that. So it opens up some options for, companies whose commercial prospects are not as bright as their cultural prospects. And that was the point I was trying to make in the piece.
Understood. And again, as you point out, it is in your book, and it is you kind of have four quadrants of possible scenarios, as I remember, exactly. In terms of the future and stuff. And yeah, it is interesting that we're seeing, as you say, portions of two of these quadrants coming through.
I think we're seeing portions of all four of them, to tell you the
all
truth.
Four?
Yeah,
go on.
I think that Marvel in particular is really in this what I call the endless summer, which is, you know, just getting the updraft of all of their media investments paying off at the same time and getting all of these synergies of, you know, like you go and you see, you know, Captain America or Thor, and then you go home and you watch, the S.H.I.E.L.D. show and mm-hmm. play the, you know, Avengers Infinity game on your Sony PlayStation. And, you know, it's like it's endless recycling of these properties. You've got a lot of really cool innovation going on in what I call the expanding multiverse. You've got DC in certain ways retrenching into a more, you know, sort of fan-oriented perspective, and they're more in that infinite crisis loop. The fact that they kind of, you know, the Warners basically threw up their hands and said, you know, we're gonna license the Cartoon Network properties to IDW rather than have them published by our own comic book publishing entity, DC. Mm-hmm. And those books are incredibly popular, and they reach this different audience, and DC, I don't think, is that interested in that. And that's interesting.
It's very interesting, absolutely. And the My Little Pony example that you did with IDW can obviously apply to – the potential is there certainly for Cartoon Network. And, you know, God, they're one Powerpuffs away from a new property or something like that. And certainly, God, Adventure Time and all that. That obviously is an independent producer, I guess, that's putting their stuff on Cartoon Network, Adventure Time and things.
Yeah.
They're not Cartoon Network, properties, obviously, per se. But, yeah, you know, we're seeing that kind of – invention. And yeah, it is weird that DC is kind of turning it over to somebody else and licensing it. It is why Warner really is run in a different way than Disney. And I'm always reminded of that by these examples and stuff. And it is weird that it doesn't seem to want to do the same things vertically the way that DC is able to achieve these things. You just give, you know, I always use a suit of clothes analogy, that the sleeves are arguing with the pants. Or something, you know what I mean, or something like that, and that, you know, everyone's not really working together in harmony.
And the way that they're trying to solve this problem is by essentially brute force. I mean, they're physically moving the operations across the country, you know, as a way, I think, to achieve some of these results. And that's an interesting approach, and it remains to be seen if that's going to pay off for them. But I can understand why they think they need to do it.
Yeah, I understand it too. And I can also appreciate the micro point of view of that in terms of everyone sympathizing for the people that have to uproot and move across the country. But then, these corporations, you know, maybe it would make it easier if everybody was, you know, in Burbank and there for all the meetings. And, you know, you can walk down the hall to somebody, you know, and get results rather than being so spread out. It's a very interesting time, and I really, God, you must love this. I mean, you must have article ideas all the time, given, you know, the frequency. And who would have ever thought we almost do live in a, if not 24-hour news cycle for geek news and business? Certainly every week there's something, so maybe a 7-day cycle?
Well, you know, I'm at the point with it where, I mean, at heart, you know, I like the business stuff. I mean, it's my job. It's my, I'm a marketing communications person and a professional business analyst by trade. So, you know, this is how I pay my mortgage. But I'm a comics fan at heart. And, you know, when I was going to the Comic-Con schedule the other day, you know, I've got these panels that I have to do, and I was kind of bummed out that all the stuff that I'm going to be missing. I mean, I want to go see Jules Feiffer, and I want to go see, you know, the Jack Kirby tribute panel and all of this stuff. I want to talk about the comics, you know, and the art and the stories as much as the next guy. It's just, you know, we're in this weird situation where the stuff that we all have known for years and years, how cool this is and how interesting, you know, the rest of the world has caught on, and now it's become this, you know, it's, you know, the Eye of Sauron has kind of swung around and is blazing down on us now. And that has its pluses and its minuses.
I understand. It's so funny. This day that we're recording, I got word about the Batman 66 Blu-rays. There's going to be a press event, and I was invited to it. It happens to be running during the podcast panel, so unfortunately, I'm going to have to miss that for one of my panels. And I'm like, So, and every year you can count on that. And I'm sure you've done that in past years as well, just looking at the program and what's opposite, you know, a panel that you're on. Like you said, I mean, oh, man, it's so Pfeiffer. Oh, man, so I'm going to have to choose between you and Jules Pfeiffer. That's going to be a tough decision, Rob. I got to be honest with you.
Well, no, Pfeiffer is not – I wouldn't come to my own panel if it was up against Jules Pfeiffer. No, I'm gonna go see that, and then of course my wife is completely unconstrained by any of this, and she's like looking at the schedule, and she's like, "Yeah, I don't want to see you talk about marketing. I can do that anytime for free. Like, I'm gonna go see, you know, Venture Brothers."
There you go. Exactly.
You know, I'm gonna lose that battle 10 times out of 10. That's no contest.
A couple of years ago, Gail Simone was like, "You want to moderate my spotlight panel?" I'm like, "I can't. I'm gonna be doing the podcasters panel." She's like, "Oh, no problem." And I'm like, "Oh." You know, and I'm glad I did it. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, it's like, oh, man. So, no, that's the beauty of Comic-Con, man. And that's why I'm looking forward to next week. And, you know, all of us that go to San Diego get – it really is, and I want your opinion. And I think I already know the answer, but feel free to vocalize and everything. San Diego Comic-Con really is exceptional compared to all the other North American Comic-Cons.
It is. We've seen this huge boom in the business, and like every show that's halfway decently run is setting all kinds of records, and kudos to, you know, Denver and my hometown show here, Emerald City Comic Con, is a great show, and New York Comic Con is getting numbers that are the same as San Diego, and yet every year when San Diego rolls around, as jaded as we are about it and stuff like that, there's nothing like the energy. It dominates the conversation. You show up there, the vibe just takes over. You know, there's all kinds of hassles and things you have to deal with. You know, when you're going to that show, you can't count on seeing anybody, or you know, I mean, I'm going to leave myself, you know, 20 minutes to get across the convention center. I hope I get there. You know, stuff like that. And yet there's nothing like it. I mean, it's really the aura and the energy of it, and just this great moment when the doors open and there's 150,000 people all there having the time of their life at the same instant. It's unbeatable.
And doing like 5 different possible things. I mean, and I've made this observation before as well, that you'll run into a cosplay group that are dressed as their favorite anime characters and stuff, and they are going to do nothing but anime and manga stuff at San Diego.
Right.
And have an amazing time, having nothing to do with us getting excited about watching a panel on intellectual property or Jules Pfeiffer and or the, you know, Mark Evanier's Bronze Age or Silver Age panels and stuff like that.
Right.
And
there's 80 independent films that are showing, and the people, you know, like people are coming just for the film festival, for probably, you know, a few thousand people. You don't even see them. You know, people for gaming tournaments or, you know, like there's probably like 800 librarians there doing librarian stuff.
Right. Or the jousting that was happening last year behind the convention hall. I don't know if you caught that at all.
Yeah, right. But there's like the zombie walk. And then now there's all this stuff that's happening. Like last year, I noticed for the first time that there was probably more people on the streets of San Diego that didn't have badges than were in the convention center with, you know, that were actually there for Comic-Con. And, you know, there's more and more stuff for those people to do. There's all of these, you know, gaming pavilions and Nerd HQ and, you know, all of that stuff that's going on outside. And, you know, all of it and the fact that San Diego, you know, it's a big city. It's got enough stuff going on there, but it's small enough that an event like this completely takes it over. Those are, you know, if you move it to Vegas, if you moved it to L.A.
Yes.
I mean, I was in L.A. last month for E3. Gigantic show, video games and, you know, stuff like that. It was around the Staples Center. If you got like 2 blocks out of there, you were in L.A. and nobody cared that there was this show going on. And it's the same in New York. But San Diego, you know, if you're there that week, you're not gonna somehow miss the fact that Comic-Con is in town.
Absolutely. And no, you're right. I mean, and it goes on for miles. I mean, you start walking, and geographically, I'm not sure what direction I'm walking towards as I'm walking away from the convention center. But as you go deeper into the Gaslamp District, all the different events that are happening, alt comedy festivals and music bands playing and stuff. I actually, you mentioned obviously that New York and LA events can't compare. I'm surprised from what I remember last year at the New York Comic Con in October, how much has spilled out into the streets a bit more than previous years. I'm sure that will continue, but a lot of pop-up events. I remember there was a Walking Dead pop-up museum and kind of interactive thing that was, you know, a couple blocks away from the Javits Center and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and I think once the Javits Center, once they develop that area and it becomes a little less of a, you know, isolated area, I don't know what they can do about the Javits Center itself as a facility, but mm-hmm. at least they can build up the surrounding area so it's not quite so isolated. That'll help. But I mean, the fact is, it's still New York. It's still like really expensive, and
yeah.
you know, there's not a lot of stuff around there. The Javits Center is kind of a toilet, you know, and it's like laid out
yeah.
wrong and everything. So, you know, it's like dealing with those handicaps is a great show, but it's, you know, it's rolling the boulder uphill compared to something like San Diego.
No question. And you're right about that. And I remind those who haven't gone to San Diego yet and you know, suffer through New York. And it's like, you got to understand that. Yeah, I'm surprised to hear. I know that New York's had big numbers. It is interesting to hear that they are approaching those San Diego numbers.
Some would say that there's more paid attendance at New York Comic Con. I think it's 130,000 was their recent.
Crazy. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
so
hats off to ReadPop. I mean, they put together a great show, and they're making it as good as they can make it for
no question.
You know, for and you know, it's a New York show, and that's going to have some clout as well.
Of course. Oh, absolutely. No, and you're absolutely right about that. But yeah, there's that San Diego vibe, and you know, honestly, the other thing, and we touched upon it mentioning Jules Feiffer, and really even the intellectual property panel with Mark Greenberg. What I really like too about San Diego is there is this level of panel discussion that really does kind of get into treating comics as the art form that I think we all want it to be. Calvin and I were talking about this earlier as well, in terms of just that there is now more books about comic criticism and attempts at documentaries and things to go beyond the basics and really give us the kind of critical look that people appreciate in traditional books and film and television, and that comics are starting to develop more of that. And that's what I love about the panels at San Diego as well. And yeah, if you don't mind your thoughts on both aspects of that from both the San Diego standpoint, but also as associate media is trying to elevate, you know, comics and as an art form.
Well, you know, I mean, to be honest, I don't feel like comics needs to be elevated as an art form. It just needs to be discovered, you know,
right.
and appreciated. I mean, and one of the great things about being a fan is that there's so much of this stuff out there that even somebody like me, I'm like, I've been reading comics for, you know, 40 years, and
yeah.
I'm still prone to discover some like amazing classic, maybe some European thing that I hadn't heard of before, and it's just like a complete masterpiece. Where did this come from? Or
yeah.
Recently, I found out there's a African American artist who had been working in the 1940s who had been doing a strip that was kind of a black version of Terry and the Pirates that ran in like African American community newspapers for 10 or 12 years.
Oh wow!
Yeah, right. And it's like it was, you know, there's all kinds of interesting stuff about that. And I was thinking, I have never heard of this. And it turns out there's like a panel on race and comics, and they're going to be talking about this strip. It's called I can't remember it. The creator's named Oliver Harrington, and it's really interesting. And it's like it seems like it's historically significant. I've read a couple of them. They're like good. They're well drawn. I've never heard of it. So it's
That's
you know
amazing.
You can always find this new stuff. And you go to a place with enough experts, and you'll always find somebody to talk about it with.
No, that's pretty cool, man. What as we mentioned, and I'm glad to hear that you're still finding foreign stuff. I never ask you what are you reading these days? What comics are interesting you?
Well, I'm really digging Southern Bastards. That's what you were talking about.
Hilarious.
How Image is Making Strides, man. That's a great book. you know, like everybody else, I'm reading Saga. I'm reading. I love Afterlife with Archie.
Sure, absolutely.
I was on the radio a couple of weeks ago about the Archie, the Death of Archie thing that's coming up.
Okay, uh-huh.
And, you know, just talking, I mean, Archie is really impressive the way that they've, you know, they've taken really the safest, most predictable product, right?
Yes,
and they're taking chances with it, and it's paying off. I mean, they're getting good people to work on it, and telling interesting stories with this kind of you know, playing with the people's nostalgic affection for these characters. And, you know, I mean, it's a real balancing act, and it, you, there's 100 ways they could screw it up, and, you know, like one way they could get it right, and they're getting it right, and my hat's off to them.
And further, that it is creators that have decades of DC and Marvel work under their belts in a lot of ways. I mean, Paul Kupperberg and Norm Brayfo. Good. I was
half still.
And certainly on the, you're right, on the Fox and the Red Circle stuff. Yeah. But even with the traditional Archie characters,
right.
Absolutely, yeah, all these guys, and Jill Thompson coming up with great alternative covers, Phil Jimenez, all these great people. Honestly, I'm pleased to see that some of the guys that and women that were doing it when we were kids, and that's why I mentioned Kupperberg in particular.
Sure.
I just think it's awesome that, you know, guys that maybe wouldn't find a place in today's DC and Marvel are bringing that magic to Archie. And also that combination of, as you say, nostalgia and kitsch and hipster kitsch that, you know, the young audience is finding it fun. And also, you know, people like you and I, you know, I mean, God, I'll tell you, beyond Afterlife with Archie, I've just enjoyed life with Archie, the married life.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm sorry that that's going. And I think they're ending it with a really fun idea and stuff. And why not? The death of Archie and all, and the details we've gotten so far. But I, you know, yeah, I just think it's terrific. And yeah, you got to, hats off to John Goldwater for assembling the right people and taking something stodgy and saying, yeah, let's have fun with it. And by the way, let's like make sure that Archie's like available to everybody.
Right.
And it's, you know, this great 180 towards acceptance and inclusion that, you know, I think makes people love Archie even more. It's really cool. No, they're one of the neat success stories. Absolutely, man. Very cool.
There's another one that I really like. It's a digital only. It's called Watchman Holmes, takes place in Harlem, and it's really well drawn and well written. And these guys had laid this on me at I think the ICV2 thing a couple of years ago. The press was just starting up, and now they're nominated for an Eisner Award, and well deserved. This is a great book. So
excellent. No, I'm glad you mentioned it. Very cool. Isn't it interesting? What is your opinion? I signed up for the Image Expo, obviously, on Wednesday, and I'm sorry that Milton isn't doing his pre-con event, at either. And I don't know if he is planning on doing it in New York. I hope so, because I'm glad that somebody is stepping in with some Wednesday programming, some industry programming, and I always find those really, you know, that's a great opportunity to kind of be a fly on the wall and observe what's going on. Are you going to be going to the Image Expo?
I don't have plans to right now. Usually we head to the exhibit hall in the early afternoon and help people set up and stuff like that.
Okay.
But to be honest, I haven't looked at it that closely. I think there's something compelling. I'll probably check it out.
Well, I'm just curious. I haven't gone to the previous ones, and I'm interested to kind of sample it live. I've talked to people who have gone, and I've certainly talked to creators who have participated in it. And, you know, I, much like Archie, I think Image is making a bold step forward and seems to be doing all the right things and assembling all the right people. You say right off the bat, Southern Bastards, brand new Image book. You know, Jason Aaron, Jason Latour, shame on me. Jason Howard, a fine, basketball player. You know, shame on me. But, I think it's really cool that, you know, what Image is doing, and I kind of want to see them present in this way that I haven't seen them do, you know, in a full-blown presentation as they have in these previous Image Expos. So, yeah, I'm curious to experience it live. So what – any other specific, convention things that you're really looking forward to? You've got a good grocery list there.
We like the social activities. I mean, so my wife is actually staff on the Eisner Awards, and I usually go out and help out. So that's on Friday night, and people say, it's an awards thing, it's for the recipients. It's actually, they're putting on a great show this year. Jackie Estrada, who's Batten Lash's wife, among other things.
Yes.
She's the administrator of the Eisner Awards, and she's put together a great list of celebrity presenters. They've been making more of a show out of it in these years, so that's actually kind of a fun thing to go to. Just seeing people, you know, it's like it's become sort of a reunion now. You go often enough and you get to meet people, and then this is the only time that you get to see them. So
I always say it's like summer camp. It's like adult summer camp, because it really is. It's like, oh, hey, how you doing? How's your year been? It's good to see you and stuff. No, man, I mean, hopefully that never happens to us, because coming from broadcasting, when I hear some creators, and by the way, it is still really expensive, and it is that week is devoted to Comic-Con, and really, as you and I know as well, the preparation for Comic-Con, and creators go through it even more so, and also the work that they are leaving behind so that they can participate in Comic-Con. I know what kind of time suck it is and how it really is a chore for them. I liken it in broadcasting to having to broadcast at the auto show. Because it's this big public event that everyone is really happy to be at as an attendee, and if you're on the other side and really have to sit there and perform in some capacity on stage, and I was doing sports talk radio live at the auto show, and also just that month being, it's always usually like late January, early February, when it is that dead period in sports, when it's hockey and basketball in midseason and college basketball in midseason, and not really, you know, very consequential, kind of in this same July period post All-Star break that we're about to experience in baseball, really before NFL training camp and preseason stuff starts in August and stuff. So it's this really tough time, and it's a drudgery, and I do get that. But again, for us, you know, like I said, it's still summer camp, and you know, it's good to see everybody, and it really is like this great 5-day party where there's fun stuff to do during the day and certainly fun stuff to do.
Yeah, the week before we leave, I'm thinking, oh, I wish it was 2 weeks long, and I get there, and it's like, no, 5 days is plenty. takes my legs and my wallet another 6 months to recover after that. I
hear you, man. I know. I was like, all right, am I going to try and leave Sunday? Or even maybe, you know, I was debating about even maybe taking a red eye back late Saturday night. And because there have been years when I've done that and I haven't regretted it. I'm staying until taking a red eye back Sunday night.
Okay.
And, But last year I stayed till Monday, and on the one hand it was fun because that's the other thing, is to be in San Diego Monday afternoon after the con, because they break down so quickly, even Sunday or Monday morning, that by noon there is no evidence that Comic-Con has taken place. It's a thief in the night. It is 5 days, and then they rob the bank and they get the hell out of there. It's pretty interesting.
And it's good to see that. I mean, when you leave when it's going on and you feel like there's stuff undone, you see the doors closed, there's that sense of closure. Okay, it's over. We could go and relax and recover. We're not going to miss anything.
Rob, I also have been meaning to ask you, and we mentioned it when talking with Calvin, that you teach a university course. Tell us about the course that you teach.
Yeah, I've been teaching at the University of Washington. They have a graduate program for a master's in communication degree. And so I've been teaching a bunch of different classes there in, you know, marketing and entrepreneurship and all of this different stuff. And I finally pitched them. I said, do you want a class on comics? Because this is, you know, a medium that communicators are going to need to be fluent in, you know, in the coming years. And they said, well, sure, why don't we do that? So I started teaching this class last year around my book, and it was called something like Visual Communication and Transmedia or some such thing. And it's basically teaching storytelling styles of comics to people who are coming at it from a background of, you know, either filmmakers or marketing professionals or, you know, PR people or, you know, people coming from different game designers, that sort of thing. And it's like, here's how to use the visual language of comics to tell these same kind of stories. So that's been a lot of fun. And as part of that, I've been bringing in, you know, a lot of guests and experts. I had Ellen Forney and David Lasky, who are both extremely accomplished graphic novelists here in Seattle, came in and talked to the class. We had Steve Rotterdam from Bonfire Agency talking about comics and marketing. And we've had, really exciting for the students, had Mark Wade as our final guest speaker this term, coming over Skype, talking about, you know, his perspectives on digital comics and the future of comics as communication. So it's been a really fun time.
Are you able to then even take it, and it's something that Calvin and I were talking about, to the same level that Will Eisner was able to do with the U.S. military and PS Comics, the way that he, you know, showed that you can really use this from a business application sense and explain complicated things to the subject that Calvin and I were talking about, and that is, you know, using it to explain Obamacare or the 9/11 Commission and things like that that have used, you know, the basics of graphic novel storytelling to explain these complex subjects.
isn't that amazing about Will Eisner? Like, for all the stuff that he did, he also did that. And it's like it's barely even remembered that, yes, Will Eisner also invented, like, nonfiction comics for training and education in addition to the million other amazing things that he created. I think we study Eisner's work and a lot of that. But some of the people that I was talking about, like David Lasky, has been doing a lot of work on comics for healthcare, and he has a strip that's distributed by the Seattle Department of Public Health on how to sign up for insurance through the exchanges and that sort of thing. One of the people that we interviewed is actually one of your homies from Chicago, Aaron Polgreen, who does a fantastic digital journalism called Symbaria. It's an iPad app that unites real journalists doing like hard news and features and investigative journalism and science journalism with illustrators, and they draw it all in comic style. And each issue is an anthology, and they've got, I don't know, 5 or 6 different stories in it, illustrated in, you know, different comic styles that are appropriate to the subject matter. And it's really cool. It's been out since end of 2012. So Aaron was good enough to speak to the class. And that was fascinating because I think that was one of the things that's really directly applicable to what a lot of these students were trying to do.
Is Symbalia kind of like what Joe Sacco does in terms of real, like, journalism, real news stories? And I don't mean to say that the other things are not real news stories, but you know what I'm saying, in terms of doing reportage, covering a war or covering a social problem and stuff, and then presenting them in a comic book way. Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, it's hard to compare anybody to Joe Sacco. I think he's just a staggering talent, and he's got a tremendously, you know, passionate and cohesive point of view behind everything that he's doing. And so, I mean, he's more in that, you know, not exactly gonzo journalism, but one of these crusading journalists with a real perspective. Symbaria is more like a really well done, like, Vox or Slate or, you know, like one of these online journalism that's doing words. They're doing it with pictures, and they're taking current events. They're doing science stories. They're doing stuff about, you know, immigration and, you know, contemporary affairs issues. And then they're representing it in comic style. So yeah, it's in the same genre as what Sacco is doing, but it's not nearly as ambitious or
idiosyncratic maybe as Sacco and again, what his particular journalism, you know, he's able to synthesize again, that kind of news journalism and his cartooning into this amazing thing.
Exactly, yeah. But we study Sacco pretty extensively, and you know, we start off the class reading Scott McCloud and all of that. And so it's an interesting perspective on comics. You see comics taught a lot as, you know, comics as literature, comics as art, comics as, you know, American culture, and those are all valid approaches. Where I'm coming from, because it's my professional expertise, is comics as communications media. And it turns out you can have some really great discussions about that as well.
And the university is, you know, enjoying the class and, you know, saying they see the value in it and stuff, and everything's going good?
They've been tremendously supportive. The chairman of the program is a real visionary, and they're bringing in a lot of really revolutionary storytellers, people that are doing transmedia and, different kinds of animation and multimedia and live events in addition to a traditional communications curriculum. So this fits right in, and it's very popular with the students. The class meets, you know, it's a graduate level class, and a lot of these people work. So the class meets every other Saturday for 8 hours, 9 to 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic, man. Well, that's commitment. That's wonderful.
And
Excellent. There's
not a dull moment. These guys they keep the energy high, and it's a real treat. I'm not a professional teacher. I can't imagine, I'm teaching professionally, but it's not my stock and trade. And the people that do this for a living, I have the utmost respect because it's super hard work. But it is, when it works, it's nothing like it. It's great. But once again, I really appreciate, this is going to be, if this conversation is any indication, we're going to have a terrific time on Friday at 1 at the Future of Geek panel.
Say hi, you're doing it good, man. There you go. Give me the broadcast close. You're a good man, Rob. I appreciate
you
that.
You trained me well.
Yeah, we were going to get to that. Absolutely, man. No, and we this might be a good point to stop and reflect, but no, I appreciate that. And yeah, man, Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock, Tim Byers, Heidi McDonald, Rob Salkowitz. I will have the pleasure of moderating The Future of Geek. And, you know, Rob has let me look at the playbook a little bit, and I'm very excited about the things that we're going to be talking about. And again, thank you for allowing me to record it, and I'm even going to have backup because I really want people to hear this. I've had the pleasure of talking to all of you individually, and I think it's a great opportunity to get the three of you together from your various circles of expertise to discuss the future of geek. And I know that's why you assembled this panel in particular as well, the strengths that, you know, both Byers and Heidi bring to this. I think it's going to be a really neat conversation. I'm very excited to be a part of it.
It's going to be great. We don't have any, like, secret Doctor Who scripts or anything like that, but I think we are going to make some news at this panel. If you're interested in what's going on at conventions and you're interested in some of the real numbers that's, you know, behind where all the money is going and how all of this is happening and why we can have nice things as fans these days, this is the panel for you. So definitely hope to see everybody listening that's coming to San Diego. Come by, say hello, and that'll be terrific.
That's great, man. No, I like it. It's kind of mom in reverse. This is why we can have nice things. I think that's fantastic. I'm glad you put it that way. No, that's the thing, you know, and I'll remind people if they don't remember, you know, Tim Byers was just on a couple of weeks ago and giving you his moxie and the knowledge that he has analyzing the business world and analyzing what the big companies are doing from a media standpoint and business. And he gets into comics. Certainly Heidi, and it's one of the reasons why Calvin was on this episode as well and why I wanted him, one of them, to be on the podcast panel. I initially asked Heidi, she said, what about Calvin? I'm like, God, I'm so glad you said that. Of course, Calvin. Their, you know, ability to really analyze what's happening publishing-wise. And it isn't just diamond numbers. It is the bookseller market. It is what's going on digitally and stuff. So to have the three of you together, and certainly, again, what you do every week in ICV2 and your fine Comic-Con book as well, I think we're going to get a really interesting conversation, and I really am excited to be the referee and keep things moving. I think that's going to be great, man.
Terrific. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you, John.
So there you go. Those two panels are going to be happening Thursday and Friday. There's an additional panel that I'm doing on Thursday night with Mark Waid. It's called The Lost 1978 Comic Book Documentary. It is the Canadian television show Behind the Scene. Had a great episode going behind the scenes at Marvel in DC. It's narrated by Jonathan Winters, and it's just fantastic. It's like looking at an old, it is an old 16mm film. That's the original source that I got the movie from my buddy Doug Klauba. But it is excellent, and interesting interviews with Stan Lee. You see Stan and Archie doing some story sessions. You've got Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill, Julie Schwartz, Jack C. Harris, Trevor Von Eden, Mike Gold. Footage from vintage Comic-Con and costume competition. Great comments on Jack Kirby art. Jim Steranko is in there as well. It's just fantastic. And really looking forward to showing this. I did it at C2E2. Doing it again at Comic-Con with Mark Waid. Great armchair historian Mark Waid. And we're going to be giving away some comics as we show some of the people in there without identifying them and see who in the audience can spot the various people that will be discussed and displayed in the Lost 1978 comic book documentary. So I hope you're able to join us and check all this all out. Thursday night, that's at 8:30 during Comic-Con. And the great news is that, you know, as long as the technical gods are on our sides, I'll be giving you the audio from the podcast panel, the 1978 Lost documentary panel, and the Future of Geek as well. So they will all figure into future episodes of Word Balloon, likely in August, as our Comic-Con coverage comes to life. So I hope you'll be able to join us out there live in San Diego, but if not, I'll do my damnedest to give you that same coverage here on the podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's episode of Word Balloon. It was brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. Great deals continue to happen at InStock Trades. We're talking about a huge 45% off the trade paperbacks of Dark Horse's The Strain, volumes 1 through 4. From DC, you can get Hellblazer trade paperbacks 1 through 8. You can also get 50% off DC Archives and lots of other savings on some wonderful books. For example, X-Files Classics Hardcover Volume 4, 30% off, just $20.99. You can get from Dynamite, Spider,
The Spider, trade paperback, volume 3, City of Crime, 30% off. David Liss and Company, $13.99. You can get The Joker, A Celebration of 75 Years. The hardcover is 42% off, just $23.19. From Dark Horse, you can get Buffy the Vampire Slayer's Spike, Into the Light. It's written by James Marsden. Spike himself, 42% off, just $8.89. You can get Spider-Man by Roger Stern. The Omnibus hardcover is 50% off, $62.49. You can get the Infinity Gauntlet Omnibus, 42% off, $72.50. From Andy Kubert, Damian, Son of Batman. The deluxe hardcover edition is 50% off, just $12.49. From Rick Remender, Deadly Class, trade paperback volume 1, Reagan Youth. 50% off, $4.99. Where? At InStockTrades.com. Go over there, go to the website, check out all the great deals. InStockTrades.com. John Sutras saying thanks again, as always, for listening to Word Balloon. Thank you, League of Word Balloon listeners, for your support. If you'd like to join the League of Word Balloon listeners, patreon.com/wordballoon. There's a tab at wordballoon.com that will lead you to the website as well. If you can spare a dollar a month, you would certainly be helping things out here at Word Balloon, getting me to the conventions I want to get to, and making the connections and bringing you the great content every month as we do right here at wordballoon.com. Looking forward to San Diego. We're just a few days away. I can't wait. I hope to see you out there. If you do see me, make sure you come by and say hello. Let me thank you for listening to the podcast. And as always, if you enjoy what you're hearing here at Word Balloon, do me a favor. Tell your friend. Tell them how great the show is and that they should be listening too. That's the best way you can help me right here at Word Balloon. Until next time, thanks for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2014.